Yes, good morning. Thank you. So this morning I'll be talking about some work we did in Pennsylvania to look at soil carbon sequestration in some bioenergy rotations, and then we applied the sequester model to our site to give us some predictions for some other crops that could be grown at that site. And I'd like to recognize my co-authors, Harold Galani and Wayne Polomowski from USDA, ARS in Oregon, did the modeling work on this project, and then Paul Adler, Howard Skinner, and myself from USDA, ARS in Pennsylvania maintained the field site. I don't have to spend a whole lot of time, I don't think, to explain why adding soil carbon is important. I think this is a crowd that probably understands and knows a lot about that already. But, you know, some of the benefits we can help to mitigate climate change by sequestering CO2 from the atmosphere into soil organic matter. We all know that soil organic matter is a very pivotal part of soil health. And if we increase soil health, we can increase the resilience to climate change impacts. Now, when you have perennial crops, you know, like switchgrass here, or add alfalfa into a rotation with annual crops, you know, you can typically expect that would be one good way of adding soil organic matter to your system. So our study here, our field study, was conducted in central Pennsylvania near State College in what's known as the Ridge and Valley Geophysical Province. See a ridge here, and our valleys in our area have a lot of dairy farms, also a lot of some corn and soybean rotations, and some other hay crops. So this was a study that was done as part of the USDA ARS GraceNet project that we started back in 2004. We focused on bioenergy crops in this site, and we had a rotation that was managed for bioenergy feedstock, and that had corn, soybeans, and alfalfa. And then we also used or established two different perennial grasses. Those were switchgrass and reed canary grass, and this was looked at over 8 years. And so then the field data, the soil organic carbon from that data, was used with the sequester model, one, to, you know, validate the model for our location, and then allow us to run some scenarios on slightly more typical crops or management systems for our region, so dairy forage and just a corn soybean rotation. So just to give you a little bit of a rundown on our experiment, it was done in a randomized block design, and it had all phases of our rotation were represented every year. So within a block here, we had, you know, three plots with corn, one with soybean, four with alfalfa, and those, you know, were rotated through the rotation. But then we also established a plot of permanent switchgrass and a plot of permanent reed canary grass. So this site was had previously for many years been in corn silage alfalfa rotations, and so but before we established the plots, we did tillage on the whole site, but then after that everything was no-till. There was a little bit of difference in the management of the corn, because it was harvested for grain, but then we removed 75% of the stover, so slightly different than a dairy rotation that would have, you know, about 95% removal of corn biomass for stover. To be typical of the farms in the area, we followed Penn State's extension guidelines for our fertility and our pest management, but we also, a little bit different than a typical farm, we used no manure. So our soil sampling here, we sampled every 2 years. We took samples after the initial tillage, and before planting is our year zero, and then every 2 years after that through 8 years. We took three cores per plot, and those were taken from a micro plot in each site. So every year we went back to the same approximately 1 meter squared micro plot so that we could cut down on some of this error in measurement related to spatial variability. And those were taken down to about 1 meter, or as close as we could get if we didn't hit rocks. Divided them into five different depth segments, dried them, ground them through 2 millimeters, and then measured total soil organic carbon by combustion and elemental analyzer. Our soils, because we have a fairly high rainfall in our area, our soils are slightly acid, so inorganic carbon isn't a consideration for us. So just looking at what we found as far as carbon sequestration in our field study, in the upper 10 centimeters of soil, we found a more or less linear and increasing amount of carbon. And so we had a significant gain in our three cropping systems over the 8 year study in all of our systems. Reed canary grass gave us the biggest increase. Now, I didn't show any other graphs because below 10 centimeters, we didn't observe any significant changes in soil carbon accumulation. But when we calculated our 8 year sequestration, the bioenergy rotation, we got about 4 micrograms of carbon per hectare, and I left off the year, but that's an annual rate, where reed canary grass gave us about 1.1 per year, switchgrass 0.8 per year. How long that'll continue to accumulate, we don't know, but as you saw from the graphs, it was continually going up at a fairly linear rate throughout our study period. Now, we applied the sequester model. I won't go into the details on sequester. I think Hiro has a talk after the break, and she has a lot more knowledge on how it works, and so she's the one to go to on how it works. But we simulated our data with historic weather, historic crop yields, and our field management. But then it was also simulated assuming climate change and yield increases. For climate change, that gave us a 1.8 degree C increase in temperature, 4.2% precipitation increase from the study period up through 2013. And then, you know, we had predicted yield increases. So those simulated data for the site then were compared to our measured values. And once that was done and validated, we then ran several management scenarios. But we looked at a couple of slightly different crops there, where we had a dairy forage rotation that we assumed 2 years of corn for silage, 1 year of corn for grain, and then 4 years of alfalfa, or a simple rotation that was just corn for grain for 2 years, followed by soybeans for a year. Now, and then with both of those rotations, we ran them with a no-till scenario, and then also with chisel tillage. And then for those combinations of crop rotation and tillage, we also ran those all with or without manure. And then to top it off, we added just to the forage rotation, we simulated annual rye cover crop after the silage corn, you know, in the dairy forage rotation. So kind of general in the modeling results, statistical correlation showed us a significant correlation for between simulated and observed data in all of our depths. However, running the just historic weather versus our current weather versus climate change or yield scenarios didn't give us any notable changes over the 20-year simulation, so that may just be too short a period to pick up the changes in our region. And so now looking at our predicted values for the scenarios we ran, that was over 40 years, so predicted soil organic carbon changes, you know, most notably the dairy forage system, you know, it was predicted to gain carbon, pretty good amount of carbon over that time. Even if we used a chisel tillage, because remember that's out of 7 years, four of those would be in perennial alfalfa. So even with tillage, we would only have tillage three out of 7 years. Adding manure to the tilled site gave us a little bit of an increase. Again, that was a liquid dairy manure slurry. It doesn't have a real high carbon content. But then bringing no-till into that rotation gave us we were predicted to have an even bigger bump. Actually, manure in the no-till did give us an even bigger bump, but then adding the annual cover crop didn't make too much of a difference. Probably just not enough biomass accrued from our typical rye cover crop yields to give us a change in carbon. Now, if we look over here at the corn-soybean rotation, we see with chisel tillage, the model's predicting that we're going to lose carbon over those years, even if we add in manure. If we go to no-till on that corn-soybean rotation, we see that we don't get much of a gain over the simulation period, but we are able to maintain the levels that we started with, at least if you're using no-till. So, and no-till is used very predominantly now in Pennsylvania. So this just reinforces the value of that practice. So our conclusions from our field study, our perennial grasses and our bioenergy rotation did add significant amounts of carbon over 8 years, you know, the reed canary grass being the most, and followed by switchgrass in the rotation. That's not surprising. But actually, those perennial crops and their carbon sequestration rates haven't been very well documented for the Northeast, and also the rotations haven't been well documented. So it's what we expected, but this kind of helps document that is the case. The sequester model, so it correlated well with our observed data, so we see that's a very useful tool to be able to evaluate, you know, multiple management options for a region. Because again, especially in the Northeast, there just really hasn't been a lot of field work done to look at how these management factors impact our rotations. So then looking at the simulated data, we saw that alfalfa in the rotation gives us, you know, the biggest benefit in terms of carbon sequestration. No-till is always very helpful, and that combination of no-till with the alfalfa gave us the biggest increases. But one thing that showed me, and it's what I've thought for a long time, is that even our basic dairy forage rotation, because of the alfalfa, even if they're not adding any other conservation practices, it's actually a pretty good sustainable practice in terms of maintaining soil carbon. Now, our liquid dairy manure and our rye cover crops just didn't seem to give enough biomass to make a difference. If we would have simulated a different manure, a dry manure that has straw or other bedding material, we probably would have seen a bump up. But the typical medium and large dairy farms in our area just have liquid handling systems, so the liquid is what they use. And cover crops, there's probably well below their potential in biomass production, because quite often there's issues with being able to get them established in the fall. So average production is, you know, like say, lower than what could be potential if you could always get it in at a prime time. So there's things like cover crop interseeding, maybe different cover crop species and aerial seeding and things that might help us get more of a carbon sequestration benefit from cover crops. And cover crops, even if they aren't giving us more soil carbon, you know, they do a lot to control erosion. So they're beneficial for other reasons. And with that, I'll thank you and wrap it up.
A question for Dr. Dale.
Kurt, how many years the alfalfa was in the rotation? Did you keep it 1 year?
Oh, no. The alfalfa in our field study, it was four years straight of alfalfa. So half that rotation is, you know, perennial. So 4 out of 8 years it's in alfalfa, yeah. Yeah, we just establish it once, and also after the first year we did no-till
to establish the alfalfa as well as the corn and the soybean.
Yes. Did you do mass phase corrections for this whole carbon spots?
I just for sake of time I didn't add in. Yeah, there was a bulk density calculation off our soil pores, and that was on a mass, a volume metric basis.
Okay.